I'm happy now to welcome to the program Sarah Roy. She's a senior research scholar at the Center for Middle Eastern Studies at Harvard University, and she will be speaking this Saturday, September 17th at 6:30 at the Unitarian Universalist Congregation in Santa Fe, presented by Another Jewish Voice. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thank you.
Sarah Roy, your talk is titled Arab Spring in Palestine, Transformation Over Revolution, A New Palestinian Strategy. Let's talk about the transformations in the Middle East and what that has meant for Palestine and basically the way the dynamics are shifting between Palestine, Israel, and its neighbors.
Mm. Well, clearly, insofar as the relationship between Israel and the Palestinians, which I'll begin with, that relationship has undergone and continues to undergo some major changes, both the official level and at the level of civil society. And it derives from, 20 years of a so-called peace process, if we use as our starting point the 1991 Madrid meetings. In that 20-year period, Palestinians have seen their living conditions, they've seen the possibility of achieving a state diminished dramatically. Their economic conditions have declined. They've had to confront an extremely adverse reality marked by the continued loss and dispossession of their land and other resources, including water, the expansion of Israeli settlements on their land, the very, very damaging division and separation of the West Bank from Gaza, which is arguably the most serious problem affecting not only the Palestinian polity, but the economy and the society. So you have a series of measures, which I will address in my lecture, that have really undermined Palestinian life, have undermined the ability of Palestinians to negotiate in their own interest. And all of this was occurring within the construct of the Oslo negotiation process, of this framework that was led by the United States that basically remove the conflict from the realm of international law, where Palestinians would have greater parity with Israelis, into the realm of bilateral relations between two very asymmetric actors. And so Palestinians didn't so much negotiate their future, but had it imposed upon them, both by Israel and the U.S. And, this had reached, for many reasons I'll address in my talk, this has reached a climax, a breaking point. And the leadership decided to break away from this, to change the status quo as it had been imposed by Israel and the U.S. And clearly the transformations in the region, the Arab Spring as it's known, played an enormous role, a very critical role in also encouraging Palestinians to protest. And popular pressures from Palestinians on both the Fatah and Hamas governments in the West Bank and Gaza respectively have been enormous, quite considerable. And there are new and emerging dynamics that have compelled the leadership to rethink its strategy, to basically extricate itself from the negotiation process, because the negotiation process has gotten them nothing. In fact, it's gotten them continued loss and dispossession and undermined their position. So this is the impetus behind the upcoming statehood bid at the United Nations. This is the impetus behind the reconciliation agreement signed between Fatah and Hamas, signed in Cairo in early May. And this is the impetus behind many other initiatives that could and hopefully will change the dynamic in a way that will empower Palestinians to try to end occupation with tools that are real and meaningful, and not be in a position of always having to react and respond to the policies and measures imposed upon them. And so this represents, I think, for me and for many others, this represents a very critical time, a potentially critical juncture, not only for Palestine, but for Israel as well, and in the future character of Israeli-Palestinian relations. And of course, the regional transformations that we see, not only in Egypt, but many other countries, provide the larger context for what is happening, and I believe will continue to happen, in Palestine. And the possibility for positive change, and no one knows where any of this will lead, but the possibility for positive change is quite real. And one sees this reflected as well at the level of civil society in Palestine and through various initiatives of civil society, many of which aim to engage Israelis in a common effort to end occupation. And there is a great deal of support among certain members of Israeli civil society and among the political leadership as well for ending the situation. So we're in a time of considerable change and flux, and we're witnessing a dynamism in the region that has not, in my view at least, been there since the first Palestinian uprising in 1987, and arguably since the occupation began in 1967. So it's a very interesting and important time. You know, where this will all lead, no one can predict. It could lead to positive changes. It could lead to very negative changes. There are many scenarios being spun by a whole range of analysts, predicting, you know, doomsday to predicting meaningful, sustainable, long-term change.
We're talking to Sarah Roy. Does the bid for Palestinian statehood at the UN include a map with borders? And if so, what are those borders?
Well, the Palestinians have been very clear. They're talking about pre-67 borders, which for them mean the West Bank, Gaza, the Gaza Strip, and East Jerusalem as their capital, with, you know, certain very limited, I think, land swaps with Israel. But basically, it's the occupied territories, the West Bank and Gaza, and East Jerusalem, which they really envision as a shared capital between a Palestinian and an Israeli state. And many people have accused the Palestinians of, or some people, I should say, opposed to this measure, particularly in Israel, have accused the Palestinians of trying to delegitimize Israel. And I personally feel that that is patently untrue. This is not an attempt to delegitimize Israel. In fact, by declaring the borders on the pre-67 lines, I mean the lines that were prior to the occupation, the Palestinians are affirming the legitimacy of Israel within those lines, and to the contrary, are not delegitimizing the state of Israel, but affirming its legitimacy. And they obviously want what is, I think, behind this initiative, the crux of this initiative at the UN, is to, as one fellow said, legislate Palestine. It's to provide Palestine as a state with legal parity, so it has parity within the international community and can address Israel from a position of equality and not from a position of vulnerability, and as a, you know, as a people who are subject to occupation and domination. And the long-term goal is to end occupation and do so, if possible, within a two-state scenario. And, you know, this is really, in my view, the last gasp for the two-state solution. There have been a lot of arguments, many of them quite compelling, that have said that, you know, the two-state solution is dead. It has been superseded by facts on the ground, by the reality in the West Bank and Gaza. And many people believe that it is not possible to resurrect that, nor do many people believe it is desirable. So for those people, both on the Palestinian side and on the Israeli side, the idea that for those people who still embrace the two-state solution as the only way out of this conflict, this is, I think, the last opportunity, possible opportunity for realizing that vision.
What would happen to Israeli settlements within that are within what would then become the Palestinian state?
Well, this is a question. I mean, this is, you know, for Palestinians, the one of the greatest obstacles, if not the greatest obstacle, to ending the occupation and to the continual dispossession of their land is Israel's settlement expansion. And if and when the Palestine is gains non, probably what they'll do is go through the General Assembly, and they'll gain become an observer state or a non-member state of the UN. They'll nonetheless be a state recognized within the 67 borders. That will then make the settlements and the settlers living in that state intruders, make their presence illegal. And this is, I'm sure, a great, great concern of Israel's. And, you know, because then they're not, they don't regard themselves as occupiers, but the settlers, in fact, of course, are. And if this resolution passes and Palestine is admitted in some manner as a state, then the settlements become, then they are illegally settling in another country. And that could raise all kinds of very serious legal issues. So,
well, and it also makes it pretty much a certainty that the U.S. will veto anything that even resembles that.
Well, yes, if the Palestinians choose to go through the Security Council, but they have the option of not doing that. In other words, if they go through the Security Council seeking full membership, the U.S. will certainly veto that. And this is what they said initially that they would want to do. It's not clear yet what they will do. But what I think the more likely scenario is that they will avoid the Security Council and they will go directly to the General Assembly, where they have more than enough votes to to be declared, to have their status basically upgraded from what it is now to an observer state. And what that means is they will be recognized as a state within the UN system, and that will give them access to various international institutions like the International Criminal Court and the International Court of Justice and various UN agencies, and they can directly appeal to these institutions rather than having to go through third parties as they've had to do in the past, and they can, you know, take Israel to court if they so choose. Now, in my discussions with various Palestinian officials, this is not something that they necessarily plan on doing or necessarily even want to do immediately after the vote. What they want to do is return to negotiations with Israel, but do so from a position of parity. And, you know, do so with certain conditions that Israel often has imposed, and begin negotiating within an international legal framework where they will enjoy parity with Israel within this framework, and where they have some sort of appeal and recourse, which they have never had. So in that scenario, they will have legal standing internationally, which is what they're seeking, even if they don't have full UN membership. And within that scenario, the settlers will then be occupying or then will be living on land that is not their own, and they will be there illegally.
Now, what is your view of a one-state solution?
Well, you know, I'll tell you, whenever I lecture and people ask me, do you support a two-state solution or a one-state solution or a three-state solution, my answer is that's not up to me. As a foreigner, as an outsider, my goal, my objective is to see an end to occupation, because the occupation is not only terribly damaging to Palestinians, it is also damaging to Israelis. And once the occupation ends, hopefully, then the protagonists involved, Israel and the Palestinians, or Israel and Palestine, can decide what sort of political arrangement they want to live in, whether it's in one state or whether it's in two states or whatever configuration they may come up with. That is not for me to decide. I'm not a Palestinian and I'm not an Israeli.
Right.
But I do, as a as somebody who has spent many years of her life on this issue, I want to see an end to this very, very egregious occupation and allow Palestinians and Israelis to find some way to live with each other peacefully and peaceably and to live a normal, ordinary life, which both peoples want and which both peoples, to varying degrees and in their own ways, have been denied.
I wanted to ask you, when I look at politics, this issue and many other issues in the United States as well, I mean, you see the economic and security and material reasons for conflicts. And then there's a part which is purely emotional, anger and hatred. And I see this sometimes when I speak to supporters of Israel here in the U.S. The way they speak is often intensely emotional, impermeable to reason, and there's an inability to see things from the Palestinian point of view. How do you address that? I mean, that seems to be a big part of this whole dynamic.
And you can find that dynamic perhaps to a somewhat lesser degree, but you can also find that dynamic among certain sectors in Palestine too. And it emanates from a situation where you have a gross injustice being perpetrated, and quite frankly, Israel's security is ultimately dependent upon the end of the occupation. And if you end this horrible system of repression and control and domination, and you allow people to see each other as human beings, you allow them to humanize the other, then ultimately I think the situation with time, of course, can resolve itself. It's a very long process. It's a very difficult process. I understand exactly what you're asking. But I think the kind of anger you see from the people you're describing, and I myself am sometimes the object of their anger and resentment and hatred, I think emanates from a profound misunderstanding and unwillingness to see what is happening and to understand their situation in terms of their own victimization and not in terms of their role as victimizers. And so at its core, I think it emanates from an unwillingness to see the other as one sees oneself, to dehumanize the other. And you know, this is a function, and this certainly isn't peculiar to Israelis or Palestinians. This is a function of a system like occupation where one group controls, dominates, and oppresses the other. And this breeds all kinds of damaging policies, damaging emotions, sentiments, misunderstandings in people. And the only way to address that is by allowing people to understand the other as they understand themselves. And I must say, too, I want to say that as bleak as the picture sometimes appears, there is great hope in the fact that there are many groups and organizations inside Israel and inside this country, within the Jewish community in the United States and elsewhere, that work with Palestinians, that support their right to live peacefully in their own state, support the right of Jewish people to live in their own state. And so there is a lot of activity going on. There has been in the past. There continues to be between Israelis and Palestinians, between Jewish people and Palestinian and other Arab and Muslim groups, where, you know, people are working towards the same goal, and that is the end of systems of oppression and colonization and the creation of a society and a polity where all people can live together. And it's for me, that's where the hope lies, and the fact that you can always find sources of support in the among the other.
Sarah Roy is senior research scholar at the Center for Middle Eastern Studies at Harvard University. And once again, she will be speaking this Saturday, September 17th at 6:30 at the Unitarian Universalist Congregation here in Santa Fe, presented by Another Jewish Voice. Sarah Roy, thanks for being with us on the Radio Cafe.
Thank you. I appreciate it.